sanctions, Russia says NATO's adoption of a new strategy against Moscow shows the confrontational nature of the Western military alliance. China hits back at the U.S. president's comments about protecting Taiwan, saying Beijing has no room for concessions when it comes to its core interests. And tens of thousands of American workers have walked off their jobs or are set to strike amid a tightening labor market. We'll have a report from Washington. Welcome to the program. Tensions escalating or are escalating between Russia and the West. The Kremlin says NATO's adoption of a new strategy against Moscow shows that the military alliance has been created for confrontation. Kremlin also defended an earlier Russian decision to sever ties with NATO, saying it was correct. Moscow says under these conditions, there is no need for dialogue. This week, NATO defense ministers agreed a new master plan focusing on Russia. They said the plan aims to defend against what they called any potential Russian attack on multiple fronts. In addition to that, the Western military alliance accused 8 Russians of spying and expelled them in a tit-for-tat move. Russia cut relations by shutting its diplomatic mission to NATO and the alliance's mission in Moscow. China has called on the U.S. to act cautiously over the Taiwan issue as tensions escalate between Washington and Beijing over the self-ruled island.
We urge the U.S. to strictly abide by the One China principle and the 3 joint communiques. The U.S. should act and speak cautiously on the Taiwan issue and refrain from sending wrong signals to separatist forces in Taiwan to avoid seriously damaging Sino-U.S. relations and peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
The official said China has no room for compromise on issues involving its core interests, including sovereignty and territorial integrity. That all came after U.S. President Joe Biden said his country has a commitment to defend Taiwan in case of a Chinese attack. China considers Taiwan as part of its territory. The island says it's an independent nation. Tensions have escalated recently over Chinese military flights as well as increased U.S. military support for Taiwan. Just 2 weeks ago, U.S. media reports revealed that American forces had been secretly training Taiwanese troops for months. Political commentator Jason Unruh says the U.S. is using Taiwan's push for independence as a tool to put pressure on China and to advance its agenda in the region.
Taiwan stands as a very useful place for the United States. They can always prop up Taiwan as some kind of alternative example to whatever's going on in mainland China. It's also a very important military strategic point. Now, obviously, anytime you have a superpower like the United States, there is always a placing of weapons near enemies. This was previously done by the United States with Turkey aiming nuclear weapons at the Soviet Union. This is very much a continuation of that very policy. I mean, this is something that empires do. This gives the U.S. a justification for having its navy very close to Chinese waters, if not, depending on how close the actual 2 countries are. Because they can always say, well, our ships are docked at an ally's port, so we have a right to be there, etc. This is something that's been going on for some time now.
The U.S. labor is back in the public eye as several unions representing tens of thousands of workers have walked off their jobs or just voted to authorize it. Wyatt Reed reports from Washington, D.C.
A specter is haunting America, the specter of Striketober. Upwards of 100,000 workers across the U.S. are either currently on strike or potentially just weeks away from it amid a historic wave of labor actions that's taken the country by storm. 35,000 nurses and healthcare workers have voted to authorize a strike against healthcare giant Kaiser Permanente. 60,000 Hollywood crew members seem headed for a strike amid widespread rank-and-file disapproval of a deal negotiated by union management. And thousands of workers elsewhere have already walked off.
Last week, 10,000 UAW members and warehouse and production jobs at John Deere started currently what is the biggest strike happening in the country. We have 2,000 TWA nurses in Buffalo and 1,400 Kellogg workers. They're also out on strike. About 1,000 mine workers in Alabama have been on strike at Warrior Met Coal since this past April.
These are just some of over a dozen labor actions brewing across the country. As executives have seen profits soar amid the COVID-19 pandemic, workers are insisting on their own piece of the pie. And with supply chain issues plaguing distribution and now hiring signs popping up left and right, they're wielding historic leverage to secure the raises and benefits they say management has been withholding for too long.
There is a tight labor market. Workers are fed up with being mistreated. We have, you know, the most pro-union president ever, potentially even more than FDR. We have a union leader at the Department of Labor who is heading the Department of Labor. Positive union sentiment in polls are the highest it's been in a very long time. Labor has a lot of leverage, and this critical moment is not going to last forever.
With the wind at their backs, many workers say it's time to press their advantage and lock in the wage increases and workplace improvements that have been steadily eroded by decades of neoliberal governance and attacks on organized labor. And with no real sense for just how long this window of opportunity will last, they say it's time to strike while the iron is hot. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
A U.S. judge has ruled that the U.S. government has no legal basis for holding an Afghan man at its Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba. Ruling sets the stage for the potential release of Ansarullah Harun Gol 5 years after his lawyers filed a petition. They argued that his detention was unlawful. Gol has been held in a notorious U.S. prison since 2007 when he was captured in Afghanistan. He remained in custody without charge and was denied access to a lawyer for the first 9 years of his detention. Gol is one of the 13 men who have been cleared by the military review board for release. Some have been or have had clearances for years but are still held in Guantanamo prison. U.S. President Joe Biden has promised to close the notorious facility that has drawn criticism over the tactics and torture used against inmates. Commentator Jahangir Mohammad earlier told me the U.S. is responsible for all crimes committed at the Guantanamo prison and should be held accountable.
Well, I think this is one of the legacies of the last 20 years and the war on terror, which put around 800 people in this particular extrajudicial facility detention center. It's pretty clear that the United States is responsible for the facility and whatever's happened. And obviously the United Nations takes some responsibility because they have allowed this situation to go on. The reality is that the international order doesn't exist to hold the powerful to account.
A new survey has showed that the Eurozone economic recovery is losing steam amid rising prices caused by a supply chain crisis. The survey was conducted by the London-based information provider IHS Market. It says the Purchasing Managers Index slipped to 54.3 this month. The figure was above 56 and at 59 points in September and August, respectively. A study says the Eurozone could falter in the near term as the pandemic continues to disrupt economies and push prices higher. Things don't look good in the UK either. Based on official data, retail sales volumes dropped for a fifth month in a row during September. The slump is blamed on a fuel crisis that has led to delays in shipping goods and high prices. Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement says its prisoners held in Israeli jails have ended their hunger strike after reaching an agreement with prison authorities. The movement has provided no details about the agreement. It said the prisoners' demands have been met, hailing it as a victory for all the Palestinian people. Islamic Jihad also called the victory a turning point in the struggle against Israel. Some 400 members of the movement are currently in Israeli jails, and more than half of them went on a hunger strike on October the 13th to protest punitive measures imposed on them. Measures followed the escape of six Palestinian inmates from a high-security Israeli jail last month. All were recaptured later. Some were put in solitary confinement. Israelis have begun the construction of new settler units in the occupied West Bank city of Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil. The project, which was approved by Israeli authorities 4 years ago, includes building 31 settler units in a military base. An Israeli anti-settlement group known as Peace Now has launched a legal action to stop the construction of the new settlement. It says the project is the first major expansion of Israeli settlements in the city in 2 decades. Palestinian residents in Al-Khalil say the new neighborhood would result in an increase in violence and consequently more restrictions on them. About 1,000 Israeli settlers live in Al-Khalil under heavy military protection, among more than 200,000 Palestinians. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Rabbi David Feldman says Israel's settlement expansion in the occupied Palestinian territories is a crime against humanity.
This illegal settlement movement is just expanding and expanding and just pushing out the Arabs and just making all these problems and all this misery, all this serious oppression that the Palestinian people faced already for decades just getting worse and worse. And happens to be that the settler issue is something that the entire world, even those who might agree with Israel to a certain extent, realize and admit that this is internationally wrong, this is a crime, and this is wrong. There is no excuse. There's no excuse to the entire occupation, but certainly not to the settlement expansion.
The fate of the 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and several world countries is hanging in the balance, with major issues still remaining unresolved after several rounds of negotiations. However, given the speculations that a new round of talks might be on the cards for the revival of the deal in Vienna, Tehran says it is not backing down from its position and is sticking to its demands. Take a look.
6 years have passed since Iran and several states, namely the US, China, Russia, Britain, France, and Germany, put their signatures to a deal under which Tehran agreed to limit some of its nuclear activities in exchange for sanctions relief. But in 2018, the situation reached a deadlock when former US President Donald Trump backed out of the deal. Not only that, but he also brought back the sanctions despite Iran's display of full compliance. Tehran waited for 1 year before finally cutting back on some of its commitments under the deal. Later on, with the administration of Joe Biden sweeping into power and the White House's declared willingness to return to the negotiating table, Tehran and the remaining signatories went back to the Austrian capital with an agenda to revive the landmark accord. Initially, some progress was made, but long-running issues remain unresolved to this day. In the meantime, the U.S. continues to keep the sanctions in place as a tool of pressure against Iran. Now, with the possibility of a renewed push for the revival of the deal, Tehran says it will not settle for anything less than results that would safeguard the rights of its people. Iran has been sickened to one point. But Washington was the party to violate the deal and should therefore be the party to take the first step by returning to full compliance. Tehran says it will start resuming its commitment only after the complete removal of all U.S. sanctions in a verifiable manner. Action and not words. That's what Iran is demanding. It also says the European partners likewise need to put aside their empty promises and get back to action.
It was the inaction of the European states that emboldened Trump to withdraw from all agreements and violate the JCPOA and Resolution 2231. That happened because the European capitals all acted as only passive observers. We are expecting that all sides come to Vienna with the full understanding that there is no shying away from their commitments, which should be fully implemented under the accord.
Iran is seeking reassurances from the European signatories that such violations would never happen again. It says any renegotiation of the terms of the deal is out of question. The administration of President Ebrahim Raisi is reviewing the details of the previous 6 rounds of discussions held in Vienna. Now, with speculations on the possible resumption of talks in the coming days and Tehran's firm stance, one can only speculate about how the other parties will fare up.
In Africa, Sudanese have held a rally in the capital, Khartoum, against the current rulers demanding a fully civilian government. Correspondent in that city has more in this report.
Protesters took to the streets of the capital, Khartoum, calling for protection of revolution and realization of its goals. Some reports say security forces attacked a group of demonstrators near the parliament headquarters. Thursday's rally came after a rival group rallied in support of the military leaders. Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok emphasized earlier that Sudan is facing the worst and most dangerous crisis that threatens the transition and even threatens the entire country. Protesters say that demonstration was orderly and peacefully chanted slogans calling for the completion of government institutions and a comprehensive reform that includes all state institutions.
We sent our message to the international community to stand with us for democratic transformation because the military will push the country to bad situation.
We're here to convey a clear message to the outside world that the time of the military ruler is over and it is time for the civilians to rule now.
We are here yesterday today to express our intention actually to remove all the military governors from the existing government in Sudan and for the full freedom for civilians and just to give all people here in Sudan the full civilian what are looking for since the revolution December 2018.
Following an aborted coup attempt on September 21st, tensions between Sudanese military and civilian leaders resurfaced. The military accused the civilian politicians of quarreling over positions, while civilians, members of the government, criticized the military leaders for claiming the sole right to lead the country through the transition period.
A huge number of people demonstrated around here, calling for the military to hand over the power to the civilian, as the Sudanese political arena divided between for and against the Sudanese government coalition. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Every year, millions of Muslims across the planet celebrate the birth of Prophet Muhammad. Sunni and Shia denominations celebrate this event on two different dates within a week. The interval between these two dates is annually commemorated as Islamic Unity Week. The message of unity is an indication of the fact that Muslims need to rise above their superficial differences and be vigilant about the malevolent intentions of external forces. A long time ago, British colonialism was based on divide and rule. Today, this policy has been adopted by material powers in the world, such as the USA. The English have always been a source of malevolence in the region. They have been a source of misery for many nations. Perhaps the setbacks that they have delivered onto the lives of this region have few peers in other parts of the world. They did it to Afghanistan, Iran, and Iraq. using various divisive methods. Another example, of course, is Palestine, which is the place where they made that disturbing and malevolent move wherein they rendered Muslims and, in fact, a nation homeless and forced them to drift away from their own homes. Meanwhile, the cry of unity and unanimity among Muslims is being released by sincere voices, inviting Muslims to pay attention to their common goals. In recent years, the desire for rapprochement with the Islamic sects has grown as people in Islamic countries become increasingly aware of the divisive policies of Western powers. For a closer look at the status of peace and solidarity within the Islamic world, stay with us on this week's edition of Iran Today. The Iranian Revolution in 1979 had, in one way or another, an impact on all social movements across the globe that were using Islamic values as a framework for their activism. That included some important Sunni Islamic movements outside of Iran. To counter this situation, the United States and its regional allies soon reacted to the revolution by trying to contain it. As a result, throughout the 1980s, West Asia witnessed an all-out anti-Iranian effort, sometimes covert and at times overt. The main outcome of this plot was the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran, which lasted for 8 years with devastating results. As if this wasn't bad enough, the action to contain Iran became one that played on sectarian divisions as well. Anti-Shiism coupled with anti-Iranian racism consequently became a tool for containment of Iran. In response, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, came up with the idea of Islamic Unity Week. This was based on the strategy of the Islamic Republic to avoid enemy traps and instead strengthen unity among Muslims. Thus, it was decided to hold the annual International Islamic Unity Conference. And a few years later, the World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought was created by the order of the leader Ayatollah Khamenei, with the primary mission of holding this important annual gathering. We've got a Shia and Sunni scholar on the show today to complement one another. Our Shia scholar would be Hojjat al-Islam Mousavi. Hojjat al-Islam Mousavi is deputy chief for the World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought. He's worth a listen.
Today, the most essential issue for the Islamic world is securing unity, empathy, and harmony. The root of all our troubles today is discord. It's because of these differences that the enemy has been able to oppress Palestinians and our Muslim brothers and continue his aggressions in front of millions of Muslims, and some Islamic nations have joined Israel and no significant action was taken. If all Muslims were united like in the early days of Islam, the enemy would not dare to commit such aggressions.
Hojjat al-Islam Rostami joined us on Skype. He's secretary for the office representing the leader in Iranian universities.
At a time when, with the process of expanding the means of communication and the great opportunities that Muslim societies have for progress, we are witnessing good and blessed events in the development of Islamic societies. Also, the issue of the invasion by dominating powers and their front against countries in different parts of the Islamic world, the need for Muslims to pay attention to each other, to communicate with each other, and to have better relations is becoming ever more clear.
The purpose of the conference is to create unity and solidarity among Muslims and develop consensus among scholars and scientists. It is hoped that by approximating these scientific and cultural viewpoints, practical solutions will be found to solve the problems standing in the way of unifying the Islamic Ummah. The 35th edition of the International Islamic Unity Conference is being held from the 19th to 24th of October 2021. Our Sunni scholar of the day is Mr. Zulfaqar Talab. Let's hear him out.
The Islamic Ummah, in the current developments of the Islamic society, must go beyond religion
and reach the essence of the Ummah, that is the Islamic Ummah. Elites, politicians, lawmakers, and scientific elites should be able to solve these issues and challenges based on the principles of the Ummah and the principle of Islam. It is like a family whose members are free at home, but when they go out in the society, they must observe a set of rules. That's when nations must leave aside their issues and instead consider common and general Islamic matters.
The World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought, of course, given that it was a special institution, could have done its job in a different and broader way if the whole system was concerned with the issue of unity. Due to the limited budget and facilities, it put matters on its agenda that are the urgent needs of the Islamic world. One was the spread of the culture of approximation in the Islamic world. By identifying the elites in the Islamic world, an attempt was made to create similar institutions aimed at bringing Muslims together in their respective countries. There are councils of unity in some Islamic countries, although they might not have been able to succeed on a large scale. These institutions are active in countries like Afghanistan, Pakistan, and others, and have the same mission as the World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought.
This year's event kicked off in capital city Tehran on Tuesday with some notable Iranian and foreign Islamic scholars, ambassadors, and high-ranking officials delivering speeches. The slogan for this year's event is Islamic Unity, Peace, and Avoiding Discord Within the Islamic World. It is expected that more than 160 foreign speakers from 47 countries, as well as 120 Iranian figures, will participate in this six-day event.
One of the most important achievements of the World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought has been the establishment of the University of Islamic Religions. This university, which was established around 1996, was able to deliver and present to the society the scientific, political, and social elites of different religions from Hanafi, Shafi'i, as well as Maliki, and even Ibadiyya, which is a very blessed achievement.
Iran has shown that Shias and Sunnis are no different. Perhaps the most obvious is Palestine. Saving the lives of Sunnis in northern Iraq from the clutches of Daesh is another example of this strategy of the Islamic Republic.
The issue of defending Palestine is based on the principle and belief that is rooted in the Islamic Republic's foundations. The Iranian constitution emphasizes the defense of Palestine and the protection of the oppressed. It is on this basis that, as I said, the standing up for not only the people of Palestine, but all the oppressed in the Islamic world who are attacked by the enemies of Islam have been emphasized per the Islamic Republic's higher laws. That's why the Islamic Republic, in its early years, moved to defend Bosnia, and even some Sunni Muslim went there and were martyred.
Najah Muhammad Ali, an Iraqi political analyst, claims that General Qasem Soleimani succeeded in defeating Daesh through establishing unity between resistance groups and people in West Asia. He succeeded in bringing resistance groups and factions together properly to eliminate Daesh. According to Muhammad Ali, General Soleimani considered unity a divine, immediate, and strategic duty among the resistance factions. He believes that had it not been for the Iranian advisory presence and the mobilization of the resistance factions in the region, the Syrian state would have fallen to the Takfiri groups. After the emergence of Daesh in 2014, and what they call the Caliphate state in Iraq, Iran played the greatest role in combating terrorism, overthrowing the terror group, and aborting the American-Israeli project. Following the start of war in Syria and its expansion to Iraq, the Iranian government sent its military advisors to these countries on invitation of the Iraqi and Syrian governments.
When the Islamic awakening took shape, thanks to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the branches of this awakening gradually spread into Islamic societies and developments took place in different countries, the whole world witnessed that the Islamic Republic was the only country that sprang to their defense.
all that effort we made in the fight against Daesh and sedition in Syria and Iraq wasn't because they were threatening our borders. In fact, we felt that they posed a danger to Islam in general and are aimed at sowing discord. Therefore, the Islamic Republic didn't take a step back in the defense of the rights of the oppressed and their Islamic movement.
Describing Iran's role in the fight against terrorism as vital and effective, Nazim Dabbagh, the Kurdistan Regional Government, KRG representative in Tehran, says that General Qasem Soleimani not only helped in the framework of consultation, but also in the battlefield. We are thankful and appreciate Iran's advisory presence and its arms aid to eliminate the Daesh threat from Erbil. I have said many times that if it were not for Iran after the fall of Mosul, Daesh could have captured Baghdad as well as the Kurdistan region. In a word, Iran played a constructive role in the war on terrorism that has brought security and stability to the region. Only those who sponsor terrorism can deny this role.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more on Islamic Unity Week after a quick diversion into world media.
Hello and welcome to the news part of the program, Unified Muslims and the Global Arrogance. This is the topic we'll be looking at for different media outlets today. The first review we have here is from Tasnim News Agency that reads, Iran's top general says, Takfiri terrorism threatening Muslims. Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces condemned a recent bomb attack that has killed scores of worshippers at a mosque in Afghanistan's Kunduz, saying Takfiri terrorism created by the hegemonic powers and Zionists poses a threat to the Muslim community. He said the resistance axis, after forcing Americans to beat a humiliating retreat from the region, most recently from Afghanistan, is being targeted. Describing the attack as a great and alarming tragedy, Major General Bogheri said the incident calls for unity, security, and stability in the Islamic world, especially in the neighboring country of Afghanistan. Let's check out another review from Ahlul Bayt News Agency. Ahlul Bayt Alayhi Salam International University can host world Muslim elites, says an Iranian official. The president of the International University of Ahlul Bayt met Maulana Abdurrahman Mullazahi, the Sunni Friday prayer imam of Chabahar. During his visit to Chabahar, Dr. Saeed Jazari, president of the International University of Ahlul Bayt, met Maulana Abdurrahman Mullazahi, the Sunni Friday prayer imam of the city and a member of the Planning Council of the Sunni Religious Schools of Iran. In this meeting, which took place on the occasion of Rabiul Awal, the month of happiness of the Ahlul Bayt, emphasizing the necessity of unity between the Sunnis and Shias, Dr. Saeed Jazari said the arrogant world has a vindictive position against Islam, and by spreading lies and insulting Islam and the family of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, it is trying to divide the Muslims of the world. Therefore, the unity among Muslims must be considered more than ever. Islamic governments should not allow the enemies of Islam to divide the united Ummah of Islam. Our last review of the day comes from the International Quran News Agency that reads, Thailand to hold virtual contest on occasion of Unity Week. Titled The Model of Good Ethics of Hazrat Muhammad, peace be upon him, the competition has been organized by the cultural section of the Iranian Embassy to Thailand and is comprised of three sections, poems, paintings, and video clips. The event will be hosted by Al-Zahra School, and students from elementary to high school levels can take part in the contest. A special section for the families has also been devised. Mahdi Hassan Khani, Iranian cultural attaché in Thailand, said the event is aimed at proximity of Muslims around the characteristic of the great prophet, peace be upon him. He added, the event will be held with the active participation of those who will build the future and will try to offer the seerah of the holy prophet, peace be upon him, as a model for ethics in the society. According to Islamic Culture and Communication Organization, participants can send their works to the event as of October 19 for 1 week. That's it for me in today's edition. Take care and bye-bye.
Islamic scholars believe that Islam offers many cogent and logical ideas, ideas that are cherished by anyone who is given the opportunity to hear them out and ponder upon them.
مفاهیم عالی اسلام مفاهیمی است که
The fundamental concepts of Islam are attractive to the whole world. The concepts of justice, monotheism, fight against oppression and protection of the oppressed, morality, and kindness in social relations, all these are great prophetic and divine slogans that Muslims rely on and design them to form the dominant discourse of the conversation about Islam and expose those who are after distortion and lie to disgrace the beautiful face of Islam.
According to Ayatollah Khamenei, Iran's leader, today two willpowers are opposing one another in the region. One is the willpower of unity and another is the willpower of discord. The willpower of unity is inviting Muslims to pay attention to their common goals. If this happens and unity is achieved, the condition that Muslims are in today will change and they will achieve dignity. At the same time, malicious, dependent, mercenary groups who receive money from CIA and other intelligence agencies, such as Daesh and the like, create situations that you have witnessed in Iraq, Syria, and other countries. They do this by using many foolish and ignorant individuals.
Attempts by some domineering countries for sowing discord among Muslims and Islamic societies have undermined many of the capabilities of Islamic societies. The economic, political, and military power that could be used to promote Islam and the strength of Islamic societies is being wasted away by being used to counter the attacks among Muslim societies. The only beneficiaries of such infightings are the hegemonic regimes and colonial countries.
Scholars in favor of Islamic unity unanimously agree that Sunni or Shia makes no difference. These types of groups are supported by the UK, US, and Israelis, with the mission of sowing discord among Muslims. In a speech to address this issue, Ayatollah Khamenei said, When you bear witness to certain radio and television channels among the Islamic world that are launched with the purpose of insulting the great personalities of Sunni Islam and other denominations under the title of Shia Islam, it becomes clear that this is British-made Shia. This is the message that only the willpower of discord conveys. And it goes against traditions of our infallible imams.
We need to be aware of the differences that the enemies have targeted. They have sought to promote an American Islam, which is either a compromising Islam or an extremist, by God, an ignorant one. That is ultimately different from the pure Islam introduced to us by Prophet Muhammad. The United States and its affiliates are pursuing such an Islam.
Iran is comprised of a variety of religions and sects. However, the official religion of the country is Islam, and the majority of Iranians are Shia. This is while Sunni Muslims constitute 10% or 8 million of the general population. They have a strong presence in different regions of the country, such as Golestan, Kurdistan, Khuzestan, and Sistan-Baluchistan provinces. They are employed in various government and military centers and play a vital role with their presence. Sunnis can also serve in the Assembly of Experts, which is the deliberative body empowered to appoint the leader of Iran. In fact, currently, three members of the assembly represent the Sunni population. In addition, there are 21 MPs representing them in Iranian parliament currently.
I was one of the youngest members of the Assembly of Experts for the Constitution. I witnessed closely how careful the experts who drafted the Constitution were, as well as the instructions that came from Imam Khomeini to the experts. I saw how careful they were not to write a Shia law in the sense that the system wouldn't consider a Shia framework only. Various clauses were written in the Constitution that required the system to defend the oppressed of the world and not only the oppressed of the Islamic world, and to have an active relationship with the Islamic world. With this basis and strategy in mind, the Islamic Republic has shown to every nation in over the 40 years that it even endures problems at home to defend Muslims and Islamic movements.
Moreover, the leader of Iran appointed Rear Admiral Shahram Irani, a Sunni Kurdish commander, as the new chief of the Iranian Navy recently. An independent research published by the Atlantic Council recently reported that, contrary to claims by misinformation campaigns, the Iranian government does not systematically and intentionally favor Shias over Sunnis in its socio-economic policies. Over the years, Ayatollah Khamenei has emphasized the need to maintain vigilance in the fight against sectarian divisions and has expressed confidence that the Shia and Sunni communities in Iran have always stood by each other in tough times and have not let anyone divide them.
The Holy Quran not only declares officially that the only relationship that can be between the Islamic society is that of brotherhood, in the words of Imam Khomeini, because of the wording the Quran uses, but it's also declaring that there can be no other spirit amongst Muslims save fraternity. That is, all of their relationships are interpreted as a brotherhood in all areas. Brotherhood is different from unity. Brotherhood means equality and empathy. We believe that unity based on fleeting interests is also baseless and simply turns to enmity when those interests are destroyed. But the unity that Islam established is stable and real because it's based on brotherhood and affection.
Over the past 40 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has made Herculean efforts to improve the position of the Islamic Resistance Front and social movements in the region and the Islamic world. Resistance groups have always, and in their extended good and bad times, viewed the Islamic Republic of Iran as an inspiring pivot point and a great supporter in achieving their noble goals. In fact, the failure of Islamophobic U.S. policies in the region today is seen by analysts as the direct result of the strategic doctrine of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is not limited to defending its own interests and territory. Iran's entry into Iraq and Syria as advisors at the request of those countries is a good example of this notion. The recent sale of fuel to Lebanon is another example. With Lebanon nearly paralyzed by fuel shortages, Hezbollah became a national savior, stepping in where the Lebanese government and its Western backers had failed. The group succeeded in bringing more than 1 million gallons of Iranian diesel fuel into Lebanon from Syria, while outmaneuvering the United States. These events helped Hezbollah win the Battle of Perseverance against the U.S. siege. Consistent with the macro interests of the Islamic world, the grand strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the field of foreign policy has been to function as a presence and influence that is stabilizing and capable of repelling threats and crises of the regional environment. The Iranian government genuinely believes that this is the best way to strive for Islamic unity. Well, as the 35th Islamic Unity Conference is ongoing in Tehran, let's hope for the triumph of peace, solidarity, and discourse among Islamic nations. That's all for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do tune in again at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
As Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام لسلمة بن كهيل والحكم بن عتيبة: شرقا وغربا، لن تجد علما صحيحا إلا شيئا يخرج من عندنا أهل البيت.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam said to Salama bin Kuhail and al-Hakam bin Utaybah, "Go to the east and go to the west, but you will never find true knowledge except for what comes from us, the household of the Prophet."
Back, dear friends, it's an honor to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam has very beautiful conversations where he puts forth truly, we could say, divine wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom and knowledge which one would clearly think that this is not something that comes from just a normal human being. It is coming from somebody who is connected to the divine, connected with God, connected with Allah. In these beautiful conversations between Imam al-Baqir and his family or his friends or his companions or the people in general, we find these beautiful words of wisdom. In one such conversation, we find that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, he responds to a question regarding the best of deeds, and he says that the best of deeds are three. One of these three deeds is treating people with justice. Now, of course, when we talk about the best deeds, these aren't the best deeds in terms of the materialistic world. Of course, these are the best deeds because Allah loves these deeds. And so these actions that are loved by Allah, of course, are then considered to be the best of actions. And so here Imam al-Baqir responds saying that one of these three deeds is treating people with justice. Truly, what a beautiful action this is. If every single individual on this planet Earth were to treat other people with justice, we would live in a utopian society. Do we need all these so-called man-made laws and all these this police and armies and weapons and guns and force and oppression and tyranny and chaos? And no, all of these things will not bring about a utopian society. That, dear friends, which will bring about a utopian society is justice. And if every single person treats each other with justice, then we will reach this utopian society. But not just any justice, not justice which is man-made or man-thought-up of justice. No, justice which is sourced from, which stems from the divine. Justice which comes from Allah. And this justice which comes from Allah is transferred to humanity via the Holy Prophet, via the divinely appointed Imams, and via the Holy Quran. Treat people with justice. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Baqir, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
We see that, you know, the role of the A'imma of Ahlul Bayt, especially Imam Muhammad al-Baqir and Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, was not confined to fiqh issues and taharat and najasat and namaz and roza and hajj. You know, they had guidance for everything. Unfortunately, people did not avail that source, you know, the way they had. You know, I think it's Abu Zar or Salman Farsi, one of the two, I don't remember exactly. After the events of Saqifa, he used to say to the people that the Ummah doesn't realize what they have lost. If they have followed the true leader, the sky would have opened up with the blessings from the heaven, and the earth would have spilled out the treasures which are underneath. Means it's not only the hidayat and akhirat. It says even from the worldly point of view, the Muslims would have advanced quite a lot. Remember that famous story of Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, the father of Amr ibn Sa'd, who was the commander-in-chief in Karbala. This is in Kufa. And Amir al-Mu'mineen is on the member. And he's saying, Saluni, Saluni, Qablan Tafqiduni. You know, ask me before you lose me. What are they asking him? You know, what are the number of the hairs that I have on my head? Whereas he used to say, ask me, because I know the roots of this space more than the roots on this earth. And this is where we have to realize that, you know, our imams were not only religious leaders talking about fiqh, and kalam and tafsir and hadith, you know, they were a source for everything. And this is where we have again another Christian scholar from Lebanon, Khalil Gibran Khalil, a very famous poet in English also, where in an introduction to a book by his friend about Amir al-Mu'mineen, he kind of complains to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And he says, you know, Allah, if you really had to send a human being like Ali, why did you send him 1400 years ago? Because people who can appreciate him are living now. You have sent him in a wrong time. We now in the 14th, you know, this in the 19th century of the Common Era, this is when he was writing, we need a leader like Ali during our own time.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.